Okay, in our afternoon schedule for today, we have one case up for oral argument. It's the consolidation of two appeals, 20-35-17 and 22-31-14, Petrov versus Bondi. Mr. Petrov's counsel is in the courtroom. I'll ask you to come forward when you're ready, and you may begin.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Vajjar Goswami on behalf of the applicant. This case involves 53-year-old resident whose deportation would cause extreme medical, financial, and most importantly, emotional hardship to U.S. citizen father and wife and three children, which Board of Immigration failed to properly consider. Bato Petrov, the appellant, came to the United States in 1974 when he was 1 year old from Germany with his parents. Mr. Petrov is now in his 50s and primarily supports and cares for his U.S. citizen father, who is in his late 80s and diagnosed with several serious medical conditions. Also, Mr. Petrov solely supports and cares for his U.S. citizen wife, who's in her 50s and diagnosed with several serious medical conditions. Furthermore, three U.S. citizen children, youngest one is now 14 years of age. All three children has some medical conditions, especially the youngest one. Appellant is an ethnic gypsy and a stateless person who fears to return into Germany. In fact, all members of his family, entire family, are ethnic gypsies. This removal proceeding against Mr. Petrov has already caused a loss of unborn family member and eminently triggering the safety of another family member.
Mr. Shreem, would you mind, I'm sorry to interrupt you, would you mind if I ask you a question?
Sure, of course, yeah.
Okay. As the petition comes to us, it comes to us against the backdrop of a finding by the board recognizing the hardships that you're outlining in your presentation, but observing that they're not extraordinary. They don't differentiate your client's situation from many others that are seen in the context of removal actions by the executive branch. How do you respond to that?
Your Honor, IJ and Board of Immigration Appeals failed to analyze the whole situation in its entirety. In the aggregate, so essentially, Board of Immigration Appeals and IJ isolated a few facts relevant to my client's wife, and never ever addressed the hardships to his father. May I continue?
Yes, please do.
The government's argument regarding the lack of this court's review is unavailing. As the U.S. Supreme Court held in Wilkinson versus Garland in 2024, the application of extreme hardship standard to the petitioner's established fact is a mixed question of law and fact. Even when they are primarily factual, falls within the statutory definition of question of law. Therefore, this court has jurisdiction and this matter is reviewable by this court. Appellant's father is now 88 years old U.S. citizen, lives in Chicago area. The effects of Mr. Petrov's removal on his father were never, like I said before, never discussed in the individual hearing, and the appellant submitted his medical records showing his serious health problems with his motion to reopen to the Board of Immigration Appeals. Unfortunately, the motion was denied on the presumption that appellant's siblings would provide support to him in Mr. Petrov's absence. In fact, that appellant is still the primary person who takes care of his father, showering, shaving, and feeding on a daily basis. The government is mistaken that appellant has waived any argument that Board of Immigration Appeals overlooked in the country condition articles which was submitted with the motion for reconsideration. The evidence regarding Ms. Helen, appellant's wife's mental condition was not available until shortly after the individual hearing. Furthermore, after the individual hearing, on or about December 4th, 2018, she was diagnosed with severe separation anxiety, severe depression, potentially concerning general anxiety and PTSD with high severity in the midst of this removal proceeding. In June 2018, Ms. Helen, appellant's wife, suffered a spontaneous miscarriage. This tragic event has caused more serious mental and psychological issues over the years. This is not a common event in the cases cited by the respondent, as it claims. Lastly, it is too presumptuous and naive to jump to conclusion that Mr. Petro, who's ethnic gypsy, would not experience some form of persecution, should be returned to Germany. Current trending worldwide right-wing attitudes concerning anti-Semitism and Roma or Gypsies certainly would instill fear, probably harm to Jewish or Gypsy persons returning to Germany. The timing of the harsh events in the lives of the family of Bato Petrov have made it difficult to present the whole facts supporting the exceptional and extremely unusual hardship in convenient, timely manner. Mr. Petrov's father, wife, and their three children most certainly suffer, as he will not be able to provide care and support them financially, emotionally, support them if he is deported to Germany.
You wanted to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. You're into that rebuttal time. It's up to you. You can keep going or save the time.
I'm going to keep going. I'm going to waive my rebuttal time.
Okay.
Like I said, stated previously, immigration judge and Board of Immigration Appeals failed to consider the whole facts in cumulative and their aggregate hardship, ignored the evidence of exceptional circumstances like his father's medical condition and wife's miscarriage. So for the reasons set forth herein, and in the interest of equity, the petitioner requests this court to reverse the decision of immigration judge and the affirmation of Board of Immigration Appeals. The denial of Board of Immigration Appeals to the petitioner's motion to reopen should be reversed and remand the case. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. You still have some time for rebuttal, so we'll come back to you after we hear from the counsel for the Attorney General. Ms. Burley? Yeah, Mr. Cerini, you can return to counsel table, and I'll call you back up here when Ms. Burley's concluded her argument, and you can make your rebuttal then.
May it please the court, Anne Burley for the Attorney General. Because this case involves two consolidated petitions, with two different standards of review. I'll start with the direct review of the first petition, which is the denial of cancellation of removal for lack of exceptional and extremely unusual hardship. First, concerning that denial of cancellation of removal, under a deferential standard of review, petitioner did not show the record compels reversal of the agency's decision. Petitioner, this court has one published case indicating that the standard is either clear error or substantial evidence, but under either standard, petitioner cannot prevail. That one published case is Santos-Mendoza, and this case determined that review is deferential but didn't determine the exact standard. There's also one unpublished case, Vasquez-Rodriguez, that correctly identified the limited jurisdiction this court has over this issue. The agency's hardship determination is amply supported by the record, as petitioner's spouse, Helen, testified that the children are all in good health and have no special educational needs. Nothing indicates that they would experience any hardship beyond the ordinary hardships associated with a family member's removal. Second, the agency did not abuse its discretion in denying petitioner's motion to reopen. The agency has two bases for this decision. First, that most of the evidence submitted was previously available at the time of petitioner's 2018 immigration court proceedings. And second, that the evidence that was previously unavailable does not demonstrate their prima facie eligibility for relief. And I'm prepared to walk through the evidence for the qualifying relatives if the court would like.
Ms. Burley, can I return you to your first point for a second?
Yes, Your Honor.
On the cancellation of removal. In the brief submitted to us, you observed that accurately that the standard of review is unsettled, and the choice seems to be between the substantial evidence standard and clear error. Is the lack of clarity in our case law on the standard of review causing difficulty for the Attorney General in cases like this? And if so, you have examples of that?
Your Honor, in terms of this specific case, I do not believe it poses any challenge. In terms of our cases overall, I would have to take that back to our office leadership and ask. I'm unaware of any cases where the standard of review has posed a challenge in our arguments. Clear error and substantial evidence seem functionally very similar. I think practically the inquiry is the same.
Well, I was going to say the Second Circuit, in its opinion, indicated that it's mixed them up, as actually had, didn't it?
Your Honor, yes, I was about to address that Second Circuit case. The Second Circuit determined that clear error was the appropriate standard. We agree that it is appropriately deferential, but as the Second Circuit noted, it's modestly less deferential than substantial evidence, which we find is our position is that substantial evidence is appropriate, not only for the deference, but also because of the cases that it generally applies to, which is, Your Honor.
No, my point was that the Second Circuit in that opinion in footnote 5 indicates that it's such a close call between the two standards that in the past it has characterized the one which you say is more deferential as less deferential, even though it sees your point at this point. So apparently the difficulty is that we really no court, including the Supreme Court, really decided what clearly erroneous means and whether there's any difference between that and clear error. Other than obviously. obviously there's one's an adjective and one's an adverb.
I agree, Your Honor. And our position is that the difference seems to be mostly in application, and that clear error applies mainly to court-to-court review, whereas substantial evidence is applicable to court-to-agency review. So our position is that based on the application, substantial evidence is the appropriate standard. Although I agree with Your Honor, the difference is very subtle. And I did survey all circuits that have considered the issue, and it seems that many are currently undecided on the standard.
Yeah, the reason I ask you the question is that in some level it gets semantic. We all know what the definition of, or at least the way the Supreme Court has defined, a clearly erroneous finding of fact, and we're familiar with substantial evidence because of a lot of our agency cases. It's just very difficult for me to see what that Venn diagram looks like in these kind of proceedings with respect to wherever in that area of ambiguity or differential between the two standards, what kinds of cases are being affected such that this lack of certainty in our court is causing difficulty, not just for the Attorney General, but for non-citizens alike.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree. Given the closeness of the standard, I'm not sure that practically there's a significant difference between the two in terms of the application. I'd be happy to take this back to my office leadership if it's helpful to Your Honors. And
I don't. If that proves necessary, we'll issue an order. But otherwise, you don't need to do that.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Tell me, Ms. Burley, does the record show how this petitioner got this, how he originally got into the United States? He came in, I gather, with his parents. The record apparently shows at least his father is a citizen. How did he get in the country and stay in the country for 50 years?
Yes, Your Honor. My friend across the aisle accurately represented a petitioner's arrival at an extremely young age of 1 or 2 years old. And he has been within the United States, our understanding is, since that time, a very substantial amount of time. We understand that the facts of this case are sympathetic, but we do not believe it changes our inquiry here regarding whether he's met the exceptional and extremely unusual hardship standard, which is an application to his qualifying relatives and not to hardship for himself.
Does the is he in fact a citizen of Germany?
Our understanding is no, Your Honor. He was by his own account, he was born in Germany, but does not have citizenship of that country.
Do we know whether Germany would accept it?
Your Honor, the inquiry, no, Your Honor, we don't know that. Should the court deny this petition for review, the determination of to what nation he would be removed is provided under 8 U.S.C. 1231b2. And a country of birth may be a possible country should that country accept the petitioner. But if not, 1231b2 has a listing of other possible countries that the non-citizen might be removed to.
Such as?
Your Honor, I'd have to go to the statute to look further, but there are other countries to which petitioner may have any connection. In some cases, third countries should, but it's a very case-specific. I don't want to speculate too much, since that would be within the discretion of the Department of Homeland Security.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And if the court has no other questions, we Our position is that respondent should prevail on these petitions because petitioner has not demonstrated that his qualifying relatives will experience hardship beyond what is normally experienced upon the removal of a close relative. And if there are no other questions, we will rest on our brief.
Okay, hearing none, thank you, Ms. Burley. Mr. Serenian, do you want to use your remaining time? I think, come on up. Just come on up to the podium.
Your Honors, the whole purposes of our request for review is that the whole legal framework of legal standard of extreme hardship to my client's set of facts, established set of facts, as opposed to we're not challenging the immigration judge's fact-finding authority and the actual fact findings. We're not doing that. For the standard of review for this court for immigration judges and Board of Immigration Appeals factual finding, it seems like substantial evidence standard is more likely applicable for this court as opposed to clear erroneous standard. For the extreme and unusual hardship for my client, like I stated before, the lower court and board made substantial error when they analyzed the factual facts of my client. They just, like I said before, just isolated few facts only for his wife and his children and never ever discussed the dad's of the father's medical condition and the fact that my client's wife suffered a spontaneous miscarriage was never properly analyzed. So, like I said before, in the cases the government cited, the miscarriage, suffering through miscarriage, is not a common event in those cases.
Okay. Very well. We appreciate your advocacy. Ms. Burley, thanks again to you. The court will take this petition under advisement. And that will conclude today's arguments.
Thank you.